How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With a Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Richard Zwicky with High on Healthy. And joining us today, we've got Dr. Sabrina Hadid, a licensed therapist based in Bend, Oregon, who specializes in helping individuals and couples unlearn harmful conditioning so they can reconnect with the truth of at the base of their and core of their relationship. And what we're going to do is explore some of the nuances also of psychedelic-assisted relational work, which is becoming a more and more important topic for how do we get over barriers and reconnect authentically. Welcome aboard the show, Sabrina.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Your work is grounded in existential phenomenal psychology, which is a mouthful. But it also is not a term that's commonly thrown around. Explain to us what that is.
Yeah. It's such a good question. And it is a mouthful. Two things. I have a master's degree in existential phenomenological psychology, and I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision. And so existential phenomenological psychology, the shortest way to describe what that means is it's a way of understanding a human's experience of living, and that we explore themes like choice and freedom, and above all else, meaning making. So helping people understand, you know, based on what they're going through, how are they making meaning of it or not making meaning, you know? And then the phenomenology piece is really just the phenomena that exist in their lived experience in the world. So, I mean, it's so much more complicated, but that's probably the briefest synopsis. The other thing to say is it does lean away from pathologizing.
Lean away from a lot of symptom-focused therapy.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, which is why I gravitated towards it, you know, 20 years ago when I first finished my degree, was I really was looking for an approach or lens that didn't focus as much on the criteria, you know, for symptoms and disorders, you know, that disease model of looking at things, and instead looked at more of the human experience.
Now, how would somebody know to approach you versus another therapist if they're struggling with depression or attachment issues with regards to relationship, or they're feeling the effects of prior trauma and unsure how to overcome it relative to a relationship? Mm-hmm. How do they explain it, and how do they, you know, not point to it as a symptom, but still, this is the issue I'm trying to deal with?
Yeah, for sure. Well, of course, you know, we have to have language to talk about the things that we're struggling with and the things that bring us joy and the things that, our longings and our motivations. And so how I work with people, couples included, family systems, is I have them tell me the story of their struggle, the story of their successes, the story of what they're wanting for themselves. And so if it's the story of trauma, for instance, which was part of your question, they can certainly list symptoms. I mean, it's not that I'm going to sway them against that. They can name it in a symptom way. A lot of us, that's how we've learned to describe what we struggle with anyway. So, you know, they may begin there. And then, for instance, if someone says, you know, I'm really struggling with bad dreams, or I'm struggling with hypervigilance, you know, where they're easily startled or just consistently in that fight, flight, freeze mode. Mm-hmm. I will almost always follow up that statement with a question of, what does that look like for you? Tell me how you experience it, and how is it getting in the way of what you would rather be experiencing, right? So we get to have some juicy conversations about what's missing, which is maybe the list of, you know, wanting to increase joy, wanting to decrease symptoms of fill in the blank, but really pulling out the story that makes their unique experience theirs.
Right.
So, yeah.
And, you know, a big part of that's got to be nervous system regulation and boundary repair. And boundaries are a topic a lot of people really don't understand. But these are must be central to your work. How do you access and intervene on these domains?
Oh, for sure. You know, I love the topic of boundaries because you're absolutely right. You know, it's something I think a lot of people are familiar with these days. It's sort of trendy, you know, it's trended, having boundaries, healthy boundaries. And just like most trends, we don't take the time to really stop and think about what do we mean when we say boundaries.
Yeah.
And I almost always start with, it's not just about boundaries with others. It's about boundaries for yourself, within yourself. And you get to decide what those are and even when you might want to let go of some of them, because some people can actually swing the other way and have so many boundaries that they're now not able to connect in the way that they're longing to. So I would say boundaries are a big part of any work that I'm doing with individuals. You know, and it starts with a conversation about, you know, what do they think their boundaries are, or are they aware of any areas in their life where they are, you know, saying yes when really they mean no.
Right.
That kind of thing. And then we go from there.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's also, it goes back to almost the common issue, which is, you know, our spoken word has intonation, context, and whatnot. You say yes, but it's the tone and the way you say yes or what you're saying yes to. People too often communicate via text, and then, you know, it's blunt. And that's a horrible path in any relationship where, and I've seen this before, where people will communicate via text message rather than face to face because they feel it gives them a boundary and protective and a barrier. But really all they're doing is hurting themselves because they're not connecting and they're not, right. they're putting up a barrier to moving forward rather than creating a protective layer.
Right. Yeah.
It's a challenging one.
It is. And it's a good, you know, it's a really important, I think, arena to explore is how are people communicating and are they, you know, more often communicating, via text or, in person, you know, email, who knows? And then why, right? So sometimes text messaging can be very helpful. Sometimes it can. Yeah. And more often than not, you know, what you were hitting on is that it can be disconnecting and misunderstood. And it also creates this sort of artificial distancing from the impact, you know? So it's easier to say the hurtful things via text, perhaps, than it might be in person. And the opposite is true as well. But first having a conversation about what does it look like for the, you know, if we're talking about a couple, what does it look like for the two of you? Or if we're talking about an individual, you know, how is texting helpful or not helpful? And, you know, how to make a plan to bridge that, because the arena is about connection. That's what you're talking about here. It's like, what's bringing more connection versus disconnection?
Well, it really is. And that's where a lot of psychedelic assisted therapy really comes into play, because often, almost always, really what we're fighting is we've created these barriers. We have these fears of vulnerability, of exposing ourselves. And when we engage in psychedelic assisted therapy, we bring down those barriers between ourselves as a couple. And we offer vulnerability. We expose ourselves. But of course, for some, they walk out of it and they've exposed themselves and they feel vulnerable, and that's petrifying. And for others, it's liberating. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with the different opportunities, but also the outcomes? Because at the end of the day, they both went in because they wanted to progress, but now some are incredibly scared and often run away, and others have found a path forward.
And I think that it isn't, you know, the way that I will respond when people have, let's say a couple, when they have two different experiences. One is maybe feeling wildly connected and like there's been repair, and the other one, you know, maybe psychedelic work amplified the struggle and amplified some of what they were hoping would maybe resolve, and they're left, you know, feeling dissatisfied or confused or, you know, whatever the case may be. And I will speak to that. But before I speak to that, I'll say that my work with them in that regard begins even before the medicine, right? Where it's we often call it preparation. Right. And what I'm preparing couples for and how I prepare with them is in part to identify, you know, what are their hopes? And I kind of like to categorize in three different areas with couples. You know, there's this intention they come in with where they want to deepen their love. They want to repair old wounds, you know, address resentments, things like that, which is not uncommon at all. And then there's a second path where they're just not sure they're going to make it. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, often called maybe discernment, the discernment track, where they're hoping to gain insight that'll help them move in one direction or another. And then the third one is maybe they actually know that they're not going to make it and they want to find, you know, a loving way to end.
Right.
But so the first thing is, you know, establishing those goals so that we know where we're headed. What's the direction? What's the hope? And then, of course, it's managing expectations. So normalizing that although psychedelic medicine can be so helpful in amplifying the things that they're hoping to see more clearly or soften the defenses that they've identified, it's not a perfect science, of course. And so sometimes it will amplify things that are harder to look at or that you thought you had resolved that are actually not resolved. And always, of course, helping to inform the couples that they may end up feeling conflicting things by the end rather than come back together. So it begins there. And then depending on how it shakes out, like your original question, if it ends up being that one person feels differently than the other, we've already set the tone for, okay, that may happen. Now it's happened. Now what do we do with it? How do we make sense of it? What does this mean to you? And that's, of course, where the beautiful and amazing and important integration happens, which we can probably touch on later. But
yeah, no, the integration is important because, you know, a lot of our listeners are familiar with psychedelics, but rarely do we sit in the other side of the chair where we're helping guide somebody through or, you know, as a therapist, of course, working closely from a professional aspect.
Yeah.
What are some of the subtle shifts that you see that might not be obvious, but are critical for lasting relational and personal transformation?
That's such a beautiful question. The more subtle shifts, I would say, you know, a lot of it can happen in the body. I'm often attuning to, you know, how they're breathing, how they're moving or not moving. We'll often talk about how they experience it in their body. And I'll sometimes see that softening even in their body. You know, which is a beautiful thing to see, or the reverse, or the opposite, rather, where I see a tensing or a guardedness. I just had a couple that I worked with a few months ago where they started out, you know, very close together on a sort of futon, you know, area at the service center. And during the journey, something was coming up for one of them somatically where they just really wanted to move away and be, you know, not as close in proximity to their partner. And so, you know, I assisted in helping make that happen. And it started out in subtle, you know, it was little signs like, you know, he was reaching out to her and she was sort of tenderly kind of trying to boundary him. And then her breathing, you know, I sort of saw that happening and that shift. I think it starts out subtle and then can become a lot more clear is the shift from conflict or confrontation lens into curiosity.
Right.
So the shift, I mean, psychedelics are so great at assisting with that, where there's the softening. And with the softening comes, you know, rather than that lens of like, how you hurt me, it then becomes, I want to understand what's going on for you that you said that or did that. What is that about for you?
Right.
You know, which can, again, start out in a very subtle way and then become this really rich, meaningful direction. Yeah.
And, you know, that actually brings us into the whole question of integration. Mm-hmm. Because when, you know, you said people can go in asking that question, but it's also how do clients translate their insights into behavior.
How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With a Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com. Tired of social media censorship? Frustrated by restrictions on TV, billboards, and traditional radio? CannabisRadio.com is the only platform where you can connect directly with over 1 million dedicated listeners without the limitations. Advertise your product freely to high-value, educated decision makers. Launch your unrestricted campaign today. Email Brasco, B-R-A-S-C-O, at CannabisRadio.com.
Relational change.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's such a range in terms of how people do that. I think that how I work with individuals and couples with it is I like to use the metaphor of the thread. Mm-hmm. So finding various threads. So the meaning making, back to that existential lens, you know, how they're making meaning of a feeling or an image they saw or whatever it is during their experience. What does it mean to them? And sometimes it's confusing. Sometimes they're like, I have no idea. That's okay. I have no idea is a very valid way to, you know, think and feel. We start with that. And then, you know, depending on how that goes, we then try to integrate or weave it into their everyday lived experience. And sometimes that's really explicit and clear. Like, okay, well, if this came up for you during your medicine experience, what does it mean for you? And then based on that, how is it showing up in your everyday life? And what do you want to see happen with that? You know, and it really just depends. It's, I almost find it more helpful to give, specific examples because it's just so different for everybody, which hopefully normalizes that you can hear 100 different versions of this work and experience something completely different than any of those.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it goes back to, I mean, our premise is always there's no one path to healthy.
Yeah.
And all this medicine really is personalized and customized. Now, Oregon offers broader access than other jurisdictions to psychedelics. Mm-hmm. What do you work with? What do you recommend for different scenarios? Or is there like a progression path that you find is optimal for people?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course it depends. I work with psilocybin and I work, as a licensed psilocybin facilitator here in Oregon. That's a legal framework that that Oregon's known for at this point. And particularly I work for an organization called Odyssey, as you know, and they are exceptional at, you know, connecting folks to facilitators like myself. And so that's one arena. And then in my therapy practice, I work with ketamine assisted therapy, which is also legal in the both federal and then state regulatory system.
Right.
And both, you know, I've done both with couples. I think that it really depends. When we do psilocybin work, the work that is happening more often than not is bigger macro journeys. So, you know, the kind of traditional, higher dosing sessions where there's not necessarily a ton of interaction between the two people at the time, maybe at the tail when you're coming out of it. But then with ketamine work, it has been really helpful for couples to do low dose sessions where you're actually able to speak and process in real time. And that can be really helpful for couples that have done a ton of couples therapy and they're just stuck and kind of going around in circles and they want that softening without having to commit to a really big journey for whatever reason.
Right.
And so, you know, those are kind of the two different paths that I offer and that I see couples reaching out for. The way that I think your question maybe had to do with like
how do you choose the right one for different people? And we'll come back to it from a different perspective. Let's clarify it a bit and come back to it from a different perspective in a couple of minutes because You know, something we're touching on is most relationship issues have their roots in experiences that predate the actual relationship, right? Mm-hmm. Clients bring childhood trauma or attachment issues from earlier relationships, not just from parent-child relationships, but early dating onward. How can psychedelic experiences support that healing to help you form a secure attachment style? Because that's what we all want, is to be secure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it has to do with a lot of what we've touched on. You know, the softening, when we talk about softening of defenses or softening of those parts of us that have become, you know, really stuck for various reasons. And that's not just relationally, but it's with self. And it's with past, you know, even memories, or whether that's the body remembering or the mind or both. And so that softening, I think, can then lead to the more effective, deeper work. A reconciliation can often occur, not always, but, you know, reconciling something that occurred in your past differently. You know, psychedelics are so great at helping with perspective shift. Even if it's something you've looked at 100 different ways with the beautiful, brilliant minds that you have, psychedelics has this capacity to sort of help us get just a little bit beyond that stuck place and move forward from it. So I think there's, and of course the research, the more modern scientific research backs this up in terms of trauma work in particular, you know, the studies that have looked at individuals that have done every kind of therapy imaginable, and they're just still not able to move forward with psychedelic work. Often, of course, not always, it's not a magic pill, but often can and do. And so I think that whether we're talking about relational work or individual, it's all interconnected. And in fact, I hope we shift from that more individual model to collect, you know, to collective, whether it's group work or family systems work, couples work, because we are relational humans. And so we are experiencing healing in relationship, you know, where I think that older models of psychology and counseling maybe more normalize that individual, you know, focus on self. And although that can be helpful and there's a time and place, I think we're really missing out on the profound healing that comes from being not just being witnessed and sharing, but the exchange that happens in understanding yourself through the lens of someone else, et cetera. So the healing, even with individual traumas in past, happens more so in relationship.
And in that context, do you find different psychedelics better one than the other for allowing you to see your partner's perspective? And also depending on their attachment patterns or mm-hmm. and your own.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that I can say definitively. I think it would be even reckless for me to say what I think is better. It would just be my one opinion. But I'm only familiar with really my experience is mostly with psilocybin and ketamine. Right. And I have some with MDMA. You know, I think mm-hmm. we were all very hopeful when we thought it was going to be approved as a legal intervention, and then it wasn't. But I really think it has to do with where the couple or individual, where they're at with their process. And then it comes down to, you know, time, even money, accessibility, right? Like some people just can't afford the full, you know, 4 to 8 hours, let's say, of a psilocybin journey versus a ketamine journey, which is, you know, when you're really in, even if it's a big dose, it's like 45 minutes to an hour of like really in it. And so it depends on so many factors. I think MDMA, you know, a lot of folks that I look up to and really respect in the field would probably say that MDMA is a really good place to start if there is a long history of resentment and inability to access empathy, because that medicine is really great at that. I do think ketamine and psilocybin have some of that going on as well. There are, of course, factors that I would never work with a couple with any psychedelic work, sort of these, you know, instant, contraindications, you know, like if there's active domestic violence or even a recent history of it, right. If there's untreated or undiagnosed severe, you know, mental disorders or struggles, those kind of things would be just not a good fit for psychedelic work right now necessarily.
No, of course, because you're opening up a lot of fresh wounds and doors that really haven't gained any perspective, but also we don't know what's going. We have so many things to deal with before we get there. But, you know, for the ones who are in a healthy position to undergo a journey and a treatment, what are some techniques you found are the most effective for helping them maintain the gains in self-trust and relational capacity and agency post-session?
Mm-hmm. So post-medicine work. Well, I mean, of course, there's, you know, we meet for at least at minimum two integration sessions where we're making meaning of the medicine work and trying to apply it to their everyday lives. And I would say it really depends. Again, I know I keep saying that and I'm going to keep saying it.
It's like my accountant. My taxes, he always says it depends.
It depends. It so depends, Richard, which you know, of course. Some of the tools that I like to use, I mean, of course, there's homework, you know, there's a packet of homework that we give them where I'm a really big fan of whatever works for them to keep track of what their thoughts and feelings are. So right. If that means writing it down, like in the journal format, and then great. But also you could do audio messages, you know, leave yourself audio messages to remind yourself what you're thinking and feeling. And then that invitation to consistently set intention for coming back to one another. Because we are creatures of habit. And no matter how profound a psychedelic journey is, we're going to default back to eventually, right? When things kind of fade into the way that we used to do things. So really setting an intention around and scheduling, you know, how are we going to follow up as a couple and individually for ourselves differently? Mm-hmm. And then how do we hold ourselves accountable from a place of compassion, you know, for self and other, not from a place of shame or blame. And you know, that's kind of loosely the default approach I use with folks, you know, is let's make a plan and let's make it be a longevity plan, you know, not just the immediate month or two after the journey plan, but beyond that, you know, the 3 month, the 6 month, the, you know, 12 month plan, and even having conversations about how do you hope to hold this in a year, in 2 years, in 3 years? What can you actively do to help check back in with some of these juicy nuggets that, you know, came up? And what's your plan when inevitably old patterns reemerge? How can you respond differently?
Right. And, you know, I'm highly introspective, so I'll be pondering it naturally. How do you facilitate that for people who, that's not their skill set, that's not their traditional behavior, but they need to spend that time thinking about it? How do you facilitate that happening? Mm-hmm. Because it's not just during the sessions, it's in between and for months after.
That's right. That's right. I love that question because it is a nod to how different people process. And if someone isn't, you know, introspective, as you say, naturally, it can be really helpful to have a very guided framework. And so, for instance, with Odyssey, we've spent a lot of time putting together an integration packet that can guide people through, and you can use it to the degree you want to. So if you are naturally introspective, you might not need it as much as someone that's like, give me all the homework possible. I don't know how to do this. I need a formal guide. And, you know, especially as an educator myself, you know, as a part-time professor, I've learned that over years and years and years of teaching how invaluable it is to have some kind of visual record of your experience, you know? So people that have a hard time or just don't know how to consistently come back and ask the questions of themselves and the experience, having, you know, some sort of formal way of either writing it down and tracking it or even creating imagery through art, artistic expression to help them. So, you know, that would be the best way I can answer that question, but I do appreciate it.
Yeah. And, you know, something struck me just as listening to you is, you know, some people are more introverted. Some people are more extroverted. Mm-hmm. their experience during a journey will differ. How do you approach that, their difference in percent from how they normally interact with the world, prepare them, but also, you know, like you said, some people will journal, some people, do you approach it differently depending on where they sit on that spectrum?
Mm-hmm. You know the answer to this one. Of course, yes, I approach it differently. I meet them where they're at. And because I do think that I'm, it is a bit of a gift that I have 20 years of psychotherapy experience, you know, versus being a newer facilitator. I do think there's value in that because I've sat with so many different expressions of emotional worlds, right. And even, you know, kind of cognitive, whether someone's really in their head or not in their head, whether they're extroverted, introverted, whatever, you know, label we want to put to it. I have really experienced the spectrum of humans in such a way that I feel pretty confident that I just kind of meet them where they're at. And ahead of time, that's why preparation is so important. Ahead of time, we often will negotiate some of what that might look like. So for instance, I just had a client the other day that self-identifies really as neurodivergent, believes that she's on the spectrum, although she doesn't have a formal diagnosis, and is very much introverted, you know, and really, I think, struggles to articulate with words what her experience is. And so we, ahead of time, established a plan for what would be most helpful for her. And so sometimes I just throw out ideas when someone can't come up with them themselves. I'll say, okay, well, in some cases it can be helpful. Touch can be helpful, right? So consent for grounding touch. I often will tell people that if it's, you know, every facilitator, I think, has a different relationship to silence and kind of letting someone have their process. I personally won't let somebody go in silence for longer than an hour or two. If I'm not noticing any, you know, if they're just laying there with their headphones and or their, you know, their eye mask and I'm not, and they're breathing, but I can't tell what they're thinking, what they're feeling, I will check in with them. And I get consent to do that ahead of time, particularly with folks that often don't express even without medicine, because I have had people get stuck in a pretty scary loop and you can't tell, and that they've really appreciated, you know, some kind of disruption or an invitation to get out of that loop. So I know that's kind of more of an answer.
No, it's an important aspect of it is what, you know, when we do get into those loops, how do we get out? And that's where the facilitator is so key and why you don't do a journey on your own. But Sabrina, we are out of time for today, but people who want to learn more about you, how to reach out to you and Ben and also to Odyssey, how should they contact you?
Yes, thank you for reminding me of that. So to contact me directly, it's drsabrinahadid.com. So drsabrinahadid.com. And then through Odyssey, the Odyssey website, which, gosh, I would even have to look up, but I think it's something like bendodyssey.com. We'll have to double check that. I should have that on hand, but I don't.
Okay. That's wonderful. And so they can reach out either of those ways and learn about what you do and your approach and how they can get on their path to healthy.
That's right.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today, Sabrina. It's an excellent conversation.
It was really great to be with you today, Richard.
And thanks to everybody for listening. I'm Richard Zwicky with High on Healthy. We'll be back again with you soon.
How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With a Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com.